The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
But the Murphys' wholesome, all-American image was an elaborate facade. The Murphys from New Jersey were really Vladimir and Lydia Gurdjieff, trained members of Russia's Foreign Intelligence Service. They were illegals, deep cover agents who had assumed false identities to enter the United States. The Gurdjieff's goal was to pass themselves off as true American patriots, to embed themselves completely in U.S. society.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Ah, spies. Huh? That was just a little audio about Soviet spies in America. That's from the Smithsonian Channel. It's intriguing. I was watching a, I guess it was a series or something on spy technology, the type of thing, the gadgets that spies would actually use. And, you know, I thought today it might be good to talk a little bit about espionage. Why? Last week I had on the air with me a wonderful man. He was a former KGB agent. And we talked, of course, at the time, a little bit about Vladimir Putin. We talked about his mental stability. We talked about him as a former agent. And it raised a lot of questions, you know. And I thought nobody better than Jack Barsky to go ahead and give us some perspective on all that. And we didn't get a chance to tell his story. I don't know whether it was last year or the year before. It could have been a while ago. I remember having him on to tell his story of being a KGB spy. He actually wrote a memoir on his life. It's called Deep Undercover, My Secret Life, Entangled Allegiances as a KGB Spy in America. You know, I don't know about you. I find this fascinating. You know, spy novels are perennial bestsellers. Spy movies are almost at the top of the box office list. And one of the reasons I think we're fascinated by them is because of the double, maybe even triple life that they live. You know, a spy will present themselves as just an ordinary guy or person, right? John Smith, you know, whoever. He works as a computer analyst. The neighbors always say, oh, he was a great guy. Yeah, it's kept to himself, right? You hear those stories all the time. Meanwhile, you know, they're spying for Russia or they're doing something underhanded. Of course, it's rare when you get to hear about real spies, because when they retire, they simply disappear, sometimes alive, sometimes dead. But when you do hear about them, it's because they've either been caught, like Robert Hansen, remember the FBI agent who tried to spy for the Soviet Union. But then there's Jack Barsky, and I want to bring him on, because Jack's a retired man. He lives in Atlanta. He in the suburbs there. He looks like a typical American suburbanite, right? There's nothing about him that tells you, you know, that his given name was actually, I believe it was Albrecht Dietrich, and he was born in former East Germany. He spent a decade spying for the Soviets here in the U.S. He got married here, and he and his wife had a son back in Germany, and then he stopped working for the KGB and the Stasi because of his heart. His heart could no longer take the betrayal he was committing against, you know, loved ones. And it was a very deep, very lonely existence. And he felt his life was a lie. Here to share his story, to bring you up to speed on the adventures as well as the conversion, is none other than Jack Barsky. Jack, good to have you back.
Yeah, I'm glad to be able to talk to you again. It's always fun.
Yeah, you've been busy. You know, you did an interview with me last week about Putin, and then I saw you on some major networks doing the same thing. And I thought, this guy's story needs to be told. It's a great one. Deep Undercover is a good read. People will love it. And honestly, Jack, it's hard for me to know where to start. I'll throw you a softball. You take it away. Maybe, how did you become a spy? I mean, what attracted you to it? How did you get solicited? I mean, tell us your story.
Well, first of all, if you don't mind, I want to give some perspective as to categories of spies. Okay? So we have the spies that are under diplomatic cover, they're typically known. You know, if you worked in the Soviet embassy in those days in Washington, D.C., as a Soviet diplomat, there was a 50-50 chance that you were actually a spy. And so those guys were being followed and had limited ability to do actual spy work. They might have like met run some Americans who would sell them secrets or give them away, whatever. But again, they were limited because they were constantly under observation. Then you have the spies that are operating under their own name, but with a regular cover, such as maybe students or business people or journalists. There are quite a few of them these days, they don't have diplomatic immunity. So if they get caught, they can go to jail. But because of their, the profession that they're pursuing, it's easier for them to do espionage. And those guys are rare. The people like me who operate under a completely different identity. As you indicated, Jack Barsky was not the name I was born with. We stole the identity of a young man who died at the tender age of 11. And I obtained the proper documentation in the United States so that I could actually live in this country as a born American. As such, I had absolutely no protection. If I get caught, I can go to jail. But I also had unlimited capabilities. I wasn't restricted. Nobody knew. The only way that somebody would find out that I was an agent would be there is a traitor in Moscow Center and gives me away, or B, I make a stupid mistake or two. But other than that, we were not findable, and there were only very few of us. In the late 70s to mid 80s, according to information that was taken directly from the KGB archives, there were 10 of us that were trained and sent out. I met one, also a German, but I don't know, and the FBI doesn't seem to know either what happened to the other 8. So that's just to give people an idea that there's all kinds of different spies. So now to your question, I was recruited. I was an ace student. I had in my third year, I studied chemistry. In my third year, I had received the the highest scholarship obtainable in East Germany, the Karl Marx scholarship, which was limited to 100 concurrent holders in the entire country. So that made me a standout. I was a member of the party. You had to be a flaming communist to get that scholarship. Based on my grades, then one could easily guess that I was a pretty smart guy. So just like the CIA, the KGB was always looking for the cream of the crop. So one day somebody – go ahead.
No, go ahead. That's fascinating. Go right ahead, Jack. Tell your story.
So it happened one Saturday afternoon. I was sitting in my dorm room when there was a knock on the door, and it's – was interesting. I immediately knew that was not a fellow inhabitant of the dorm, because our habit was to you knock on the door and that meant I'm coming in, and so people would immediately after the knock open the door, and the knocker didn't come in, so that had to be somebody who was from the outside, and so I said, "Come on in." And of course, it was somebody from the outside. Now, at that point, I didn't think about it. But in hindsight, how the heck did he know that I was in that room? There were no nameplates. So I put two and two together. We had an exchange student, a Russian exchange student, who was a neighbor, and it was a resident in a neighboring room. I bet you he told the KGB where they can find me. So this man was a German. And so initially when he started talking, I immediately knew that, you know, this, he's not real. He pretended to be from Carl Zeiss Jena, which is an optics, very well-known optics company that made and still makes optical instruments. And he just pretended to, like, sort of recruit me after I graduate. And that was the stupidest lie that an agent could have invented for himself, because in those days in East Germany, after graduation, you were assigned. There was no recruitment by companies. Or so, you know, I played along. I at that point, to me, it was Stasi, and I wasn't afraid or anything. I had done nothing wrong, so I knew it could get interesting. And indeed, it did get interesting when he changed his tune after about 10 minutes and said, you know what, I got to admit, I'm not from Carl Zeiss Jena, I'm from the government. That's what he said, government. And then he asked the question that he came to visit me for. And the question was, can you imagine to one day work for the government? And I knew where this was going, even though it was like a little nebulous. I said, sure, but not as a chemist. So we were communicating between the lines. He asked the question. I answered the question, not the way he asked it, but the way he wanted to hear. And so he said goodbye. He said, well, I want to meet you again. And he invited me for a meal sometime the following week in the best restaurant in the town of Jena, where I studied. And I'm going to stop in a second. So when I show up at the restaurant, I see the man, and he was sitting at a table with another person, with another male. And I walked over there carefully because I didn't know whether the other fellow was a stranger or he was a colleague of the man who had talked with me. But the man who I had met came up to me and he said, let me introduce you to Herman. We are working with our Soviet comrades. And then he said goodbye. So this is how I got in touch with the KGB, because it was Herman and me. And Herman spent about 15 months working with me unofficially. You know, we had meetings. We talked about everything, about life. I admitted to him, for instance, that I was shy around the girls, and he, you know, encouraged me, and we became really good friends. He also gave me some tasks, and we talked about what it would be like to be an undercover agent. And
what was training like?
Okay, at that point there was no real training. Let me tell you the tasks that he gave me. He was fundamentally assessing whether I had the qualities to go out in the world and operate on my own. Mm-hmm. He made me, for instance, when my friend and I went hitchhiking on one summer, all the way from East Germany down to Bulgaria, which included Romania and Czechoslovakia and Hungary, he made me write a report about what I witnessed. He made me write some profiles of fellow students. I believe this was not to spy on them. I believe it was just as a practice exercise, because the profiles were already available in the Stasi archives. And he also gave me a task to, let's say, go to this... Now, showed me a building. It says, can you find out what's going on in there? You know, what company or office? So I had to sort of like get friendly with some people that I saw, you know, leaving the building under some pretext. And so this was pretty much what we did while I was working with him. Again, I guarantee you, we met, either once a month or sometimes twice a month. I guarantee you, after every meeting, he went back to the office and wrote a report.
Wow.
And eventually he came to the conclusion that, this guy can do it.
Yeah.
And so he sent me to Berlin on my first mission as an agent, because in Berlin I had a name, a cover name.
Mm-hmm.
I had a code phrase. I had an address and a time where I would meet another agent. And that was my first secret meeting. The fellow I met, his name was Boris. I guarantee you that wasn't his real name either.
Right.
And I spent 3 weeks in Berlin. Very similar. Yeah, a lot of talking in this guy's car. He gave me, for the first time, he gave me West German literature to read, like magazines, Der Spiegel and Der Stern. That was great because it was forbidden. So already felt like above the law.
Wow.
And he also gave me, you know, a little task similar to what I had done in Jena, where I lived.
Mm-hmm.
And on the last day, he took me to the office of the head of the KGB in East Berlin. That was it was a whole complex where they had the military as well as intelligence people, headquarters, Soviet headquarters in Berlin. And so as we walk in there, there's this diminutive man sitting behind a big desk, totally unimpressive. And then he opened his mouth.
Mm.
And forget about it, unimpressive. He had his voice commanded the room. He spoke only Russian, but I understood quite a bit of Russian at the time. We had a lot of Russian in school. And what I didn't understand, my Boris would translate. And it initially was just like meaningless propaganda and how you're doing, some small talk. And then, bam, he switched and he asked the question. So can we count on you? Are you in? I wasn't prepared for that. You know, I was just playing along. I had never thought that this would actually happen.
Right.
Okay. So when he asked that question, I stalled. I said, you know, I don't know. I'm not trained. I don't know if. And he said, don't worry about it. We'll train you. But I got to tell you, we only work with people who can make decisions quickly and good decisions. So I give you until tomorrow noon to say yes or no. That made for a sleepless night, because now I had two choices. I had a brilliant career ahead of me at the university. You know, there was no doubt that I would wind up a tenured professor, and that would have been a highly valued position in society. And, you know, the other thing that held me in Jena was, you know, I was a member of the basketball team.
Yeah.
And so that team had become my family, because I almost never went home to visit my mother, and my parents were divorced. What I didn't have at the time was a girlfriend, you know, a steady girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
So it was, you know, the career and the basketball on the one hand, and the adventure. And you know, the knowledge that I was going to be somebody really special, and the ability to travel to the West, that eventually won.
Yeah. So, Jack, let me just hold you right there. I'm going to take a short break. When we come back, we'll hear more of the story. I want to hear where you did your spying, how you transmitted information back.
Yeah.
Maybe what the hardest part of the job was for you, and what ultimately brought about this transformation, this change in your abdication from the KGB. My guest today, Jack Barsky, former KGB spy, telling us his story. And we're back with more right after this. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, a little Mission Impossible. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome. If you're just getting in the car, maybe turning us on, I'm speaking with the author of Deep Undercover, My Secret Life, Entangled Allegiances as a KGB Spy in America. Jack Barsky joins me today. He wrote a memoir, and we spoke to him last week about Vladimir Putin. I talked a little bit about the KGB, and I thought it would be interesting to hear his story. How do you become a KGB agent? What's entailed? Jack's story ends on a different note, though. He ended up leaving the KGB and the Stasi because his heart could no longer take the pain, the betrayal that he was committing on a daily basis against those he loved. And as he shares in his book, there's a deep loneliness in that vocation. And Jack, it's good to have you back. Before I go to you, let me just throw out the phones too. If you've lived under Soviet rule, if you know what it's like to be there behind that iron curtain, maybe you or somebody you know has been in the world of espionage. We'd love you to join the conversation too. Feel free to call in, share your story. It's always intriguing and a lot of fun. 888-914-9149. So, Jack, you've been solicited, and now you've been given a mission. Bring us up to speed. What happened next? How did you communicate your secrets back? What did you have to spy on? And maybe what happened in the end? How'd you find your way back to normalcy?
I want to quickly build a bridge to the topic that you topics you just mentioned. So I got altogether close to 5 years worth of training, where I learned all the spy craft of what I'm going to talk about, and I also studied English, and it turned out that my ability to speak English almost accent free was just too delicious for them to pass up the opportunity to put me into the United States as a born American, as opposed to, you know, originally I was supposed to go to West Germany. And so I was launched in the fall of 1978. I had with me a lot of cash, some spy paraphernalia, and a shortwave radio, and the birth certificate of Jack Barsky. That was in a secret compartment in my luggage. I traveled with a false passport. And so I made my entry into Chicago and made my way to New York and spent a full year. It wasn't easy. A full year acquiring the two documents absolutely necessary to live and work in the United States was a driver's license and a social security card in the name of Jack Barsky. Oops. So now help me with some questions so I don't get lost here.
No, it's fine. I mean, I'm just asking to share your story. You came here. What did you spy on? And how did you communicate your secrets back to communist Germany?
All right. What I did not know then, but I found out much later, that the illegals, like me and the others that they sent, their value was primarily being in the United States, being unknown, because during the height of the Cold War, there was a good possibility that all the diplomats would be kicked out. And then who was left to do some work? You know, who was left to communicate with existing traders in the United States? So we were valued just for being there. And in addition, I had some tasks. I was...
Jack, before you tell me about your tasks, I'm just curious. I'm sitting here thinking, how much is the pay for a spy? I mean, what was the pay like in today's dollars? You know, it had to be, I'm assuming, pretty good because you're putting a lot of risk.
No, it was just slightly above what I made as an assistant professor at the university. When the first year in the U.S., I didn't work, so the pay was $800 a month, which was substantial. And when I had a job, they gave me $600 a month. Yeah. And that was just that piled up in Moscow as savings. Right. Certainly, for Americans, this wouldn't have been considered a lot of money. However, on the other side of the Iron Curtain, it was wealth.
Okay? Yeah, and again, absolutely. Again, the era we're talking about here. You were spying in late 70s, 80s. When were you in the?
Yeah, mostly in the 80s. And I stopped in 88, and so I started in 78.
So, I mean, you take a look at that, and you know, $800 in 1980 conversion, it's a significant paycheck. And as you point out, what you could buy over in, that communist bloc is off the charts. So you could be pretty wealthy on that. But go ahead. I don't want to get distracted. I was just curious as how you were paid. So, Jack, we don't have a whole lot of time. Let's get back to share a little bit of the story with us and how you communicated back, and ultimately, you know, what made you decide to leave the KGB?
Okay, so the communication was the most awkward part of my existence. I had to listen to shortwave radio where they once a week on Thursdays at 9:15 for 10 years. So they would there would be a transmission in Morse code that was double encrypted, and so this is how I got my the orders and some questions, some answers to questions that I had. You couldn't put a whole lot of information into a radiogram. And it was even worse the other way around, because I communicated through secret writing that I put on regular mail that would go by airmail to a third country where somebody was a volunteer who worked with the KGB. He would then meet a KGB agent, and that agent would put it in the diplomatic pouch. It went to Moscow where it was developed. So it was just awkward as heck. And the bottom line is, when people think, when you see in the movies or on TV the Americans, the resident illegal always meets a handler and they talk with each other. No, it was absolutely forbidden to meet another agent in the country where you operate. Right. So that was the communication.
Interesting. Let me do this. Let me grab a call or two, too, Jack. I'm going to jump in here very quickly.
Yes, sir.
If you want to join us, it's 888-914-9149. We're talking to Jack Barsky, author of a book in which he shares his memoir of being a KGB spy in America. Dee Dee is listening in Phoenix, Arizona. Dee Dee's got a question for you. Hi, Dee Dee.
Yes, doctor. The question is for you. I would like you to, if you can, unless it's top secret, of course, the similarities or dissimilarities between the recruitment policies used by the KGB versus the CIA. And no one hears about the CIA anymore. So what's going on with them?
the main difference, the main difference was, and still probably is, that you can apply for the CIA. I wouldn't have been able to apply to work for the KGB. I didn't know they didn't have known offices. They weren't in the phone book, so they recruited you. They sought you out. And the other thing is, I was trained strictly one on one. When you go to CIA based training, you spend a lot of time in classes with other would-be CIA agents.
All right. Dee Dee, thank you. That's a good question.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you, Doc.
It's an interesting, fascinating world, to say the least. So, all right, Jack, we only have a few minutes, so I want you to maybe share a little bit more of your story. You now became an American citizen. You're involved in espionage. You're sending your materials back. I'm sure there's many other ways. What happened that made you decide that you wanted to change your lifestyle? Did you like American values? Did you like the freedoms that we had here? I mean, it was a totally different reality than what you had behind the Iron Curtain.
No, that came later. I mean, I appreciated the life I had in the United States, but I was still, deep down inside, I was still a communist, and I was not going to betray the country or the cause. But this is what happened. I became a human being. I dated a young lady who had come from South America, from Guyana. She became pregnant. I married her. And that was about, I married her. She became pregnant. And 9 months later, a girl was born. And 18 months thereafter, the KGB asked me, they told me it was in a supposedly an emergency. They were under the impression that I was about to be taken to jail. You know, they were wrong, but you know that's what they thought. And so the command was come home urgently. And so now I really had a problem because I said had become a human being. I had fallen in love with that little girl. Her name is Chelsea. She's now 34 years old. And I no matter how I twisted it, I had no idea how I could take care of her from a distance. And so I just couldn't, I didn't want to leave her. This was an unexpected attack of unconditional love because, you know, an 18-month-old girl, what does she give you other than a smile? And the risk that I was taking was that actually the FBI was on my case, or once I told the KGB that I would not obey the order, then there was a possibility that they might not like it a whole lot because I was aware that they had in the past assassinated defectors. Mm-hmm. So I did it anyway. You know, this is where you understand the power of love, and that's a Christ-like love. It's unconditional. Now, I wasn't a Christian. At that time, I was an agnostic. I had moved off of atheism because it didn't seem to be a good idea because I met a lot of Christians in the U.S., and they were all good people. So, you know, anyway, and so I stayed. I was very careful for 3 months to not be reliably at a certain place at the same time. And I also did, I took measures to find out whether I'm being followed, whether I'm being investigated. I was in the clear. So after 3 months, I said to my wife, all right, let's buy a house. And that decision made me an American. Wow. Buying property. A year later, we moved to the suburbs, and 8 years after that, the FBI finally found me.
Hmm. What was that like?
It was a big surprise. Yeah. I was approached at a toll bridge over the Delaware River, where I was flagged down by a state trooper. And he asked me to step out of the car, routine traffic stop. And then a man came from my right side behind. He flashed the FBI ID and said, FBI, we would like to have a talk with you. Mm. As I said, that was a huge surprise. And the fellow who I still know well, he's a friend of mine now, told me that I my face lost all its blood. It went from pink to white as the snow.
Did you lie? I mean, you denied your connection to the KGB, I'm assuming.
No. At this point, the wall had come down.
Yeah.
The Soviet Union didn't exist anymore.
Okay.
I wasn't a communist anymore because after the war after the wall came down, I was able to, you know, do some research. And, you know, the internet was a good source for finding out what had gone wrong and what the Soviet Union once was and what East Germany once was. And I found out that I had served with a false belief, the devil. Mm-hmm. So I was totally relieved once it turns out that, you know, the FBI was very friendly and, you know, they were interested in what I could tell them. So I said, well, I'm going to tell you everything I know because I have no reason to lie. And, you know, I had another child. We had two children. I had a family. I wanted to stay here.
It always amazes me, Jack, when I hear about Americans who are willing to give up government secrets. And just recently, I think there was a couple that was arrested for doing that. Because this is your country, et cetera. You know, how do foreign entities, you know, I can understand how they formed you, got you trained to come over and spy, but how are they able to infiltrate and get Americans to give up secrets for their own country?
Greed and ego. Either both or one or the other. And it's interesting to point out that every ex-agent, CIA, FBI, NSA, I meet has a tremendous amount of respect for me because I did not go into this business for money or because of my ego, but I went in there because I thought I was serving a just cause.
And
that is very well respected in the intelligence world. You mentioned Robert.
I'm sorry, Jack. I'm joined by Jack Barsky today, a former KGB spy. We're taking a look at the world of espionage. Jack, I have to take a short break. When we come back, I have a few moments left. We'll go to the phones. We'll grab some calls for you, and we'll hear the rest of your story. If you want to join us, you got a question for Jack about the world of espionage, or maybe you had a brush with it yourself. Maybe you lived under that type of, you know, communist regime. You want to share your story? You can get it now, just a few minutes on the other side of this short break. But I'll give you the number, 888-914-9149. You can call now and get in. Rob will grab you when I return.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Listen to the wind blow. So good to be here with you today. Diving into the world of espionage by Jack Barsky. A former communist spy. He was a communist, born and raised, and made his way to America. Had a profound conversion of heart. And his book is called Deep Undercover, My Secret Life, Entangled Allegiances as a KGB Spy in America. With all that's now going on with Russia and Ukraine and China and Taiwan and so many other places, espionage clearly has changed in the past several decades. Does it still go on? What do we know? What's the philosophy and psychology behind it all? And Jack is here to answer some of your questions. Jack, let's do this. A lot of people want to talk with you, so in these final moments, let's take a few phone calls for you. We'll go to Boston first. Rob, thanks for waiting. You're on the air.
Hey, Drew. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
So, Jack, I was wondering, what did you think of the show The Americans? Because that was supposedly based off a real couple that came
to
the States
off a real,
and had kids.
Yes. I'm aware of it. I watched most of it. It was very entertaining. The psychology of being an undercover agent, an undercover couple in another country in the United States was very well done. Everything else that you is depicted there as far as espionage is concerned is pure fiction. All right. And then I got to stop here. Drew, if you allow me, I need to squeeze something in here.
Sure.
As you know, I became a Christian. The story of how I became a Christian is too long. It would take another hour.
Right.
But it is not only to be found in my book. It's also to be found in a 12-episode podcast called The Agent.
Mm. All right, The Agent.
Yes.
12 parts. That's great. So you totally break it down. Also, the book Deep Undercover, you can check it out. Rob, I appreciate your patience, and we should talk about your conversion to Christianity. But before I do, Rob wants to know, would these spies still be here today? Are there spies from that era still living in the U.S.? Unknown.
Oh, you bet. You bet. Probably not illegals like me. We were extremely difficult to find, hard to train, and hard to maintain. But, you know, the world has become much more open. So, yep. You know, we have thousands and thousands of Russians and millions of Chinese in this country. So don't you think that some of them do are spying? Of course they do.
Mary in New York State. John, Rob, by the way, thanks for your call there in Boston. Mary in New York. Good afternoon.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call. I was just wondering what Jack's perspective is on the state of affairs in our country and even in the world. We never thought, or at least I never thought, the deep state was actually a thing. But in the last, since maybe President Trump and since, it seems there's such a movement in this country to restrict our freedom of speech, our even religious liberties during COVID being a non-essential, considered a non-essential business. And it seems rather frightening. I'm just wondering what your guest perspective is on how he perceives things that are going on.
I'm sharing a concern. If this continues going that way, we will wind up with some kind of totalitarianism. Yeah. There is what I really find sad is the dumbing down of America. There is almost no more reason left in the public discourse, and where reason is out the door, you know, emotions rule, and wherever emotions rule, you are easily manipulated. So I'm sorry, this is, I hope this gets reversed, but right now the direction is not encouraging.
Okay. Mary, thank you. It's a wonderful question. Good
thank
to have you.
You
here today. Let me go to Tom in East Providence, Rhode Island, up and down the eastern seaboard here. Tom, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe.
Hey,
just my question is what Jack thinks about what's going on, the follow-up by Mary's question, the with China and the Confucius Institutes and just our governmental relationship with China. You hear all these different things about our politicians and their close-knit relationship with China, and which I think is our biggest enemy. We're giving them technology, they're stealing our technology. Do they even need spies? We're just giving it to them, it seems.
That's a good question.
Be negative.
Yeah, go ahead, John.
Well, they do everything. They also have spies, and you know, remember the lady, this Chinese lady that became good friends with Eric Swalwell.
The honey,
Democrat congressman.
Yeah.
You've got to be wary of Chinese nationals that are allowed to come to the United States simply because. Yeah. The Chinese government knows that they allow them to go, and I guarantee you they're being recruited in some way.
Yeah, Tom, to your point. No, go ahead, Jack. I don't want to step on you. Go right ahead.
And they're mostly amateurs. They're not well trained, but you know, you throw enough of those amateurs at the problem, some of them will strike gold.
That's true. And to Tom's point, though, that was a good one. I mean, the world of espionage has radically changed from, you know, when you have these clandestine meetings too, you know, the technology, the digital age we have now, what computers have done, the ability to communicate. I'm sure information is hacked, stolen. There is so much going on. We know what the Chinese have done with our intellectual property. So how vast, how big it is, you know, I can't speak to that. I don't know even if you can, Jack, because you've been out of the industry, but it's a major concern for me. I do worry about how much intelligence is siphoned.
One remark here, as long as you can't hack a human brain, human intelligence is still the absolute crown jewel of intelligence. If you can find out as a foreign agent, find out what's in our president's mind, what he might want to do, that's valuable more than anything else.
Yeah, that's well said. John in Fairlawn, New Jersey. Thank you for joining us.
Hi, thank you. I just want to make a quick question. I've been reading about Bella Dodd, who was converted by Bishop Sheen, and she claimed that she was trained in Russia in the 30s, 40s, and they migrated, infiltrated seminaries, things like that in the world. Does he know anything about a Bella Dodd who converted eventually to Catholicism?
Thanks, John. That's a good question. Are you familiar with that story?
I'm not familiar with the story, but I know that the KGB infiltrated all kinds of international organizations, including Christian organizations.
Yeah. Well, Jack, we'll have to have you tell how you started following Christ in the days ahead. And everyone else on hold, my apologies. I am up against the clock with Jack Barsky. If you want to read his story, Deep Undercover, My Secret Life, Entangled Allegiances as a KGB Spy in America. And what's the name of your podcast again that you did, the 12-part series?
The Agent, and it's available on all major streaming platforms.
That sounds great. Jack, thank you for being here with us. It was a fascinating conversation. We'll talk again soon, okay?
All right. Take care. Bye-bye.
All right.
God bless.
All right. So, look, I only have a moment or two left. If you missed any of the conversation, want to hear his whole story, go back to relevantradio.com. Maggie will have our show up probably about an hour or so after we're off. And just go to the podcast, download it, share it with others, listen to it, and tell others about us, or find it where podcasts are housed. Now, Maggie was telling me during the break, and Maggie, maybe you can open your phone, about something that's going on later tonight. What is that, and why are you pretty passionate about it?
So I had seen a bunch of articles last week, Drew, about a movie that was that's going to be out tonight. It's one of those Fathom Events movies that is out for 2 days. It's tonight, this Monday night, and also next Monday night. So those dates are tonight, the 21st, and the 28th. It's a movie called Man of God. It's the story and of the persecutions and holiness of a humble priest that's venerated by the Eastern Orthodox Church. Wow. His name is Saint Nectarios of Aegina. I'm not sure if I'm saying that right. But Aliteo was saying, they wrote an article about it last week. They said, this is the perfect movie for Lent. This is the story of a holy man. He's persecuted within his ranks from external, forces. And you just see this man who changes so many people's lives, and yet he's persecuted so greatly. I watched the trailer for it. It looks amazing. And we were lucky enough, if you're a listener and you like this kind of thing, I just got a confirmation that on Wednesday afternoon during our show, we'll be able to bring the writer and director of the movie on.
It sounds great. That's fascinating. I never heard of it, Mag. It's news to me today, but that sounds great. And I'm a big fan of supporting these types of movies that inspire and deepen one's faith, especially during the Lenten season. So if it's only a two-night showing, go out and see it. Go and check it out. I don't know where you'll have to do, I guess, a quick search and find a theater near you to see it. But we'll talk more about it, I guess, a little bit later in the week. I am out of time for the day, and I want to thank you for allowing me to be part of your afternoon. And thank Jack Barsky for being here. And we're going to give you a look at life tomorrow that I think you will find both fascinating and enlightening. I'm trying to track down the consecration of Russia, the prayer. We might be able to have access to that by tomorrow. If we do, we'll tell you what the Holy Fathers are going to do. And I'll share some fascinating stories. There's an image of Our Lady actually weeping in Russia. She's weeping tears of blood. If I get a chance, I'll fill you in on that as well. We got a lot more to get into. Hunter Biden, I meant to ask Jack Barsky about that. Hunter Biden's laptop and what we're now seeing in China and so much more. We'll take a look at that and more tomorrow. Until then, pray for me. I promise you my prayers. Have a great afternoon.